ways we've been trying to connect it to today and ourselves being Christian priests. But also, last week we were hitting the topics we had last week and the topics we have this week will tend to lean more toward the Old Testament with fewer applications to today, but I think there's certainly some along the way as well. If you remember last week, we started out with Leviticus chapter 9. If you want a nice place to begin, you can either be opening your Bibles to Leviticus 1 or Leviticus 9 if you want to open your Bibles. Otherwise, you can listen for a couple minutes as we review. Last week, the week before, we had talked about when the priests were consecrated, and that was in Leviticus chapter 8. And then we found some of the very first thing that happened as they were as their ministry began. That was found in Leviticus 9. And last week we talked about the beginning of the ministry. We talked about the offerings that were offered. The first offering was for the high priest or for the people? The high priest. The high priest needed to have his sins forgiven. The high priest needed to be pure before he then would offer sacrifices and prepare for the forgiveness of the people. Okay? There were also other offerings that were mentioned. And then if you remember, it had mentioned that the glory of the Lord appeared. Now, it also, there in the last few verses, it talked about Aaron blessing the people. And this was a blessing of the priest that we come across in Numbers chapter 6. This is probably the blessing he gave then, and blessing he gave other times as well. And this is a very good passage for us to keep in mind for us today as well. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Again, my own impression of that is the ultimate way that God lifts His countenance upon us and gives us peace is through Jesus Christ. Yes, it happens on a daily basis, but through Christ. We started last week to talk about the nature and the role of priests. We talked about the idea that it was a divine choice. It wasn't something that the priest was elected to or God on his own. It was divinely appointed by God. They represented the people, implied offering sacrifices and intercession. So as we were talking last week, basically we got to about right here, and I was talking about offering sacrifices. There were only 2 or 3 minutes left. I had got to the chief duty by reconciling men to God, atoning for their sins through the sacrifice. I had planned to look at Leviticus 1, but with the amount of time we had, I went ahead and briefly mentioned the last one, intercession and sacrifices. So what I'd like to do this morning is go back and pick up a little bit of what we didn't pick up last week. So we're going to, at the beginning of this week, be continuing with the idea of sacrifices, offering sacrifices. I also, later in the hour, want to talk about the difference between Levites and priests, and also about Nadab and Abihu and the strange fire that they offered. But I would encourage you to turn with us to Leviticus chapter 1. We've talked about the priest offering sacrifices. What I want to do is I want to briefly go through one of these sacrifices that are mentioned. The first 9 verses we'll go through and glance at in just a moment. There's various sacrifices that the priests offered. The first 9 verses here simply help to give us a feel of how it was conducted. What I want us to notice is the teamwork. The teamwork between the person who brought the animal to be sacrificed and the priest himself. Okay? There were certain things that the individual did. There were certain things that the priest did. Also notice where it takes place. And notice who it is as it's mentioned each time. Let's take a look. We'll read the first 4 verses at the moment. I'll go ahead and call on some individuals along the way. Matt, would you go ahead and read the first 4 verses of Leviticus chapter 1 if you're there? All right, thanks. So let's stop right there for the moment. We're talking right now about a burnt offering. Okay? And we'll briefly glance at some others as well, but we're going to get into more detail here. But with this burnt offering, you'll notice it's either of the herd or of the flock, meaning it would be a bull or a ram, you might say, or a sheep. If it is, it talks about a male. But here's the thing I want to notice. Where did they bring it? Where did the sacrifice take place? Toward the end of verse 3.
Tabernacle of the meeting.
Okay. It took place at the tabernacle. They brought they brought their sacrifice to the tabernacle because that's where the altar was, right? Now, what was the role in verse 4? What was the role of the individual who brought the sacrifice? What did they do? Okay, and what was the reason for that?
To make atonement for him.
Okay, and so what we're seeing here is an order of the Lord. When I say this, I'm not talking about a direction or an order, but I'm seeing kind of the order, the process that the Lord wants. And the Lord establishes order along the way, and this is one of the ways He does it. The person who brought the sacrifice puts their hand on the head of the bull, if you will, and the reason to do so is so the atonement will be made for his sins. Okay? Let's pick up with verses 5 through 9. Would someone read those, please?
He shall kill the bull before the Lord and the priest. Aaron's son shall bring the blood and sprinkle the blood all around on the altar that is by the door of the tabernacle of the meeting. He shall skin the burnt offering and cut it into pieces. The sons of Aaron, the priest, shall put fire on the altar and lay the wood in order on the fire. Then the priest, Aaron's son, shall lay the parts, the head, and the fat in order on the wood that is on the fire upon the altar. But he shall wash its entrails and its legs with water, and the priest shall burn all of the altar, shall burn all on the altar as a burnt sacrifice, and an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord.
Okay. So again, let's notice that anything to do with the actual sacrifice, the altar and things relating to that, was done by the priest. But other things were done by the individual. For instance, we've already said in verse 4 that the individual put their head on the bull. And now verse 5 tells us that it's the individual who kills the bull before the Lord. And then the priests. And how are the priests described here? The priests are described as Aaron's sons. Please notice, we're going to see that 3 or 4 times, and that's going to help establish a point that we'll make later. But then the priests are the ones who bring the blood, and they sprinkle it on the altar, and by the altar that's by the door of the tabernacle. It is the man, it is the individual who skins the burnt offering. I believe that's the individual anyway, then still skinning the burnt offering and cutting it into pieces. It's now the priests who put the fire on the altar and lay the wood in order on the fire. The priests, Aaron's sons, are the ones who lay the parts, the head, the fat, in order on the wood that's on the fire of the altar. He shall wash its entrails again. To be honest, I'm taking that to be the individual rather than the priest. And when it uses the word he, it could be either one in essence. But he shall wash the entrails, the legs. The priest shall burn on the altar as a burnt offering, a burnt sacrifice. Okay? And of course, it's as a sweet aroma to the Lord. Okay, so to me, one of the values that we're seeing here is this wasn't something that was, number one, just grown by the priests there at the tabernacle, and they were the ones that just offering all the time, and the people had nothing to do with it. That wasn't the way it worked, was it? Each person, and probably each family we're talking about, it doesn't speak of the ladies bringing anything, probably males under 20 weren't bringing things. We're talking about heads of families that are bringing these. They are putting their hands on. They are the ones that are killing, and I believe doing the cutting and things of that nature. But anything as far as the altar itself, the priests were the ones who were doing it. And the priests are who? As mentioned here a couple of times?
Aaron's sons.
Aaron's sons. Comments or thoughts that you might see from this?
You know, it always calls it a burnt offering. I don't know, later we get that. I think of a burnt offering as it's burnt and you couldn't eat it because it was, quote, cooked. But there were things that the priests ate.
There were other types of offerings very much. You're right. As a matter of fact, let's glance briefly at verse chapters 2, 3, and 4. I'm not going to go through in as much detail, but chapter 2 talks about a grain offering. Okay? Verse 1 starts out, anyone offers a grain offering of the Lord, his offering shall be a flour. Verse 2 says, he brings it to Aaron's sons, the priests. Okay, and we go on. The end of verse 2 speaks about it being an aroma to the Lord. Verse 3, the rest of the grain offering shall be Aaron's and his sons. So here, they are eating of that grain offering. Does that make sense? And I didn't read every detail. I'm just trying to make some kind of reiterate the points you're making. Verse 3 there, as far as the grain offerings, the priests would eat of those. Okay? Glance briefly at verse 4. Here's a peace offering. When his beginning, hopefully I said chapter 3, all of a sudden it sounded like I said 4 to me. Beginning of chapter 3, the peace offering. When his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering, he offers it of the herd, male or female, it will be without blemish. He shall lay his hand on the head of the offering, kill it at the door of the tabernacle. Aaron's sons, the priests. If you go on down, it may mention whether they eat of that or not. I didn't really focus on the eating part of this, but the point I'm making right now briefly is there were various types of offerings that they did eat of. I'm not sure if the priest would have eaten of the burnt offering, but here's the peace offering. Verse 4 speaks about some details of the sin offering. Verse 2 speaks of if a person sins unintentionally against the commandments of the Lord. Verse 3, if the anointed priest sins.
Verse 16 says...
which chapter?
Chapter 3, and the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma, all the fat is the Lord's.
Okay. So, Gwen, we're seeing in chapter 3, verse 16, that when they offered the peace offering, that was to be eaten by the priests.
Well, that was their source of food because they didn't have any inheritance. They didn't have land to grow food on. Mm-hmm. And their job was to offer sacrifices, you're talking about. There's other places that say that was their source of food, their income.
Right. So, certainly agreeing with you that there were offerings and that the priests did eat of. I'm not sure if they ate of the burnt offering, but some of the other offerings they did. Part of the reason I kind of briefly was touching on all of those is you'll find that in each case they brought it to where?
Tabernacle.
And in each case these things were done by the sons of Aaron, the priests. There are various places that it mentions the priests, and there are various places it mentions the sons of Aaron as it connects those as well. Okay, so again, those are some of the things and the teamwork that we're seeing here. The role of each, the priest and the person who brought it. Other comments or thoughts relating to these?
You know, I don't know that I've given a whole lot of thought, but you know, when you there in chapter 1, you think about these burnt offerings and you think about all this meat that would be put on there, and of course they washed different things, and so you've got liquid, and can you imagine what this fire would have to be like and the constant effort to keep this burnt, this burning? You know, I mean, it doesn't take long before you put moist things on fire before it doesn't. It's not a fire anymore. So it's probably amazing what this thing had to look like or what they had to do to just keep that going all day. I mean, you're not talking about an animal. You're talking about animals, multiples.
Right.
Imagine.
Do you think there was a line out the door, we might say now, as far as people bringing things to be sacrificed? It's probably not a couple every hour.
Right.
It's a matter of a continual.
But just the job, I mean, just try to keep a barbecue fire going. Just for cooking food that doesn't touch it and moisten it all. That's an unbelievable job, task. I can't imagine what this fire had to look like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So there's some things about the priest as they offered those sacrifices. As we continue on then, we're going to kind of make a brief distinction between priests and Levites. First, we're going to make the brief point that Aaron and Moses were Levites. You can see that in a couple places. I'm not necessarily going to turn there, but I would just kind of show you a couple places that you find it. And in the second chapter of Exodus, it talks about a man of Levi took a woman of Levi and married him. We're talking about of the tribe of Levi and these would be the parents. It said she then bore him, Moses and Aaron, is how the Bible, I believe, worded it, something to that effect. In Exodus chapter 6, it's talking about the sons of Levi, and one of the sons of Levi that's mentioned is Kohath. One of his sons is Amram, and his sons include Moses and Aaron. Okay, so we're seeing here just kind of establishing the fact, first of all, that Aaron was a Levite. He was of the tribe of Levi. But sometimes when we hear the phrase, the priests, the Levites, does that mean all the Levites were a part of this priesthood? Does that mean all the Levites were doing all these things as well? Well, there's some distinctions to make here as well. And I'd like to turn to Numbers chapter 3. Numbers chapter 3. Some of you may, off the top of your head, recognize these things and not need a reminder. But some of us also may need a kind of a reminder. And it kind of is nice, too, when people speak about priests or Levites, to have a feel which of these we're talking about, whether that basically means the same thing or there are distinctions. You'll notice first, verses 1 to 4 speak about the priests, Aaron's sons. Would someone pick up and read Numbers chapter 3, the first four verses, please?
Now these are the records of Aaron and Moses when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab, the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priest, whom he consecrated to minister as priest. Nadab and Abihu had died before the Lord when they offered profane fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So Eleazar and Ithamar ministered as priests in the presence of Aaron, their father.
Okay. So what I like about this is it establishes very directly who the priests are. It mentions Aaron, it mentions his sons, it mentions the death of two of them, Nadab and Abihu. It mentions that they had no children. So we realize that any time we're talking about descendants of Aaron, we're talking about the next two. We had Nadab and Abihu, we also have Ithamar and Eleazar. These are the ones that any of the other priests would come through. Okay. Last week, Mike mentioned Nadab and Abihu and their death. At the time, I acknowledged it, but I really hadn't included it in the lesson. In a minute, I'm going to go back and point a couple of things out about their death as well. But for right now, our point is about the distinction between priests and Levites, so I'll continue with this for now. But that's what we see about the priests. Let's continue on from verses 5 to 13. It talks about the Levites and their purpose here. Someone, if you will, take the first 10 verses, or excuse me, verses 5 to 10. And would someone pick up with 11 to 13?
The Lord also said to Moses, I have taken the Levites from among the Israelites in place of the first male offspring of every Israelite woman. The Levites are mine, for all the firstborn are mine. When I struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, I set apart for myself every firstborn in Israel, whether man or animal. They are to be mine. I am the Lord.
Okay. So the Lord sanctified, consecrated, or set apart the priests. The Lord also sanctified or set apart the Levites, right? Both of these groups of people had a very special role in the Lord's service. In a sense, though, they also had a distinct role. Now, yes, all the priests were sons of Aaron, therefore all the priests were also Levites, but they had a special thing to do. And now in these next few verses, verses 5 through 13, we have some other descriptions. So we see in verse 6 that the Levites are brought near that they may serve the priests. So basically, and I've kind of got three different aspects mentioned here, they were serving the needs of Aaron, and I believe that would be the other priests as well. They served the needs of Aaron and the congregation. They were sanctified to the Lord in place of the firstborn. Let's see, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's see, is there anything more we want to say at the moment about serving the needs of the people? You know, I was thinking earlier, we know the priests offered sacrifices. I'm not positive, and I really at the time wasn't thinking of the distinction. Does that, as the Levites were set apart for to serve the Lord, we know they did a lot of things with the tabernacle. It mentions that here. Verse 8, they shall attend to all the furnishings of the tabernacle of meeting, to the needs of the children of Israel, to do the work of the tabernacle. I'm not going to say for sure whether they did or did not offer sacrifice. We know the priests offered sacrifices. Off the top of my head, my own impression is that the priests had a special place to offer sacrifices, and the Levites may not have been a part of that. But I'm not also not going to say that definitively. One, as I was driving over, kind of thinking about that, I was thinking of John's father. If we remember the book of John at the beginning, as it describes the birth of John, Zacharias was in the tabernacle, or in the temple at the time, offering sacrifices. I believe he was offering sacrifice. He was certainly taking care of the role that he was supposed to. I don't remember off the top of my head if Zechariah, John's father, was a priest or simply a Levite, if that makes sense. You understand what I mean when I say simply a Levite? Would have been of the tribe of Levi, but not necessarily a descendant of Aaron. If someone wants to look at that, the moment they can. But does anybody else have a feel for sure? Again, my impression is that Levites, the other Levites, did not offer sacrifices, but for sure the priests did. Does anybody have a definitive idea on their own about that? That may be the case.
I think it was just like God chose the firstborn, you know, he also chose of the animals for sacrifices, he also chose only the best humans to be his priest, and out of that particular tribe.
And one way we could phrase it, the sacrifice was to be without blemish.
Right.
And that's kind of the idea you're speaking of with the priest as well. Okay? But what we're seeing is then Levites were certainly set apart for the service of the Lord, but had a different role than the priests necessarily. Let's go ahead and comment a little bit on the idea of the firstborn and how they were set apart and how the Levites replaced them, and then we'll open it up to other comments too. But we see then that verse 9 has said the Levites will be given to Aaron, entirely to him. Let's see, and so we come down to verse 12. I myself have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens the womb among the children of Israel. And then verse 13 describes how the firstborn had been set apart. We remember, of course, that as they were ready to exit Egypt, the death of the firstborn was the last plague that had befallen the Egyptians as the death angel passed over. And of course, the firstborn of Israel were saved as the blood was put over the doorposts of their homes. And so God, at that stage, he had mentioned that he is setting apart the firstborn of his children. And now he is saying, rather than continuing with that pattern, here is the way we are going from here on. The Levites will replace the firstborn as the ones who are sanctified to participate in godly activities, serving the people, serving the priests in the tabernacle. Comments, thoughts on some of these ideas about the priests and the Levites.
When he says there in verse 13, they shall be mine, I am the Lord. They shall be his in what way different than any other Israelite?
Well, when it's the Lord, of course, I started to go on the idea of holiness for a moment. Actually, the word Lord is Jehovah, which is self-existence, I am. So I'm not sure the word Lord implies, well, the Lord is holy, but the word Lord implies self-existence, uncreated. But one of the things that comes to my mind deals with the holiness of things. In a moment, we're going to go back and talk about Nadab and Abihu. when and also about the altar of incense as it was established at the beginning. The idea of it was its holiness. So when it says, I am the Lord, one of the things that comes to my mind is, I am holy. When we are sanctified, we are set apart for a holy purpose. So that's the idea I get. They are mine, says the Lord. And there is a holiness that is that they are to make sure they have at all times.
Did those firstborn, did they do something special?
They did not, in essence. I mean, they were saved. They were saved because, in essence, their parents had put the door had put the blood over the door of the home. They themselves had not done anything special. Did you ask, had they done anything special, or did you ask if they were special?
No, that was my question. In other words, when he says, they shall be mine, I guess the picture is this, is that all the firstborn were going to die, but because they obeyed the Lord and put the blood on the doorpost, he's saying, they're going to be mine to do with what I want.
Right.
To
me, it's similar to the idea of the priesthood. The first thing we said, that this was by divine selection. The priests weren't voted in, they were selected by God. This is the same idea that comes to my mind. Had they done anything special to be selected in a sense? Maybe not. But he selected them to be his. Anybody else have any other comment or thought on that? Or something else. Let's go ahead and move to one other aspect here. And again, if you have other comments on any of this during the rest of the class, feel free. But I think you'll notice as we were reading through here in Numbers chapter 3, it had mentioned about verse 4, Nadab and Abihu had died before the Lord when they offered the profane fire. Let's go back and pick that story up for a moment. Back to Leviticus chapter 10. And you know, what I find very, very interesting in Leviticus chapter 9, we had talked about this last week. We had talked about the awe that was present because the priests had just been established as priests. They then, with all the sacrifices that were offered, verse 24 of Leviticus chapter 9, verse 24, fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. And when the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. They saw the glory of the Lord. They saw the holiness of the priesthood that had been established. And now they're going to see something very different here in chapter 10. You'll notice what happens in Leviticus 10 happens shortly after the establishment of the priesthood. But let's take the first three verses of Leviticus chapter 10 to find out about two of these very first priests, Nadab and Abihu. Clayton, have you read yet? Would you read verses 1 to 3?
Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it and offered the profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified.
Okay. And so, in a minute, we're going to go to where everything was established about this sacrifice, or about this altar. But what we see here is simply the idea that they offered fire that was, the word in my Bible says profane. Does anybody that maybe from the NIV or another word, or another translation have a different word than profane? We'll talk about what it means in a moment, but... Unauthorized. Okay. When I think of profane, also the idea it's unauthorized. It's common. Profane doesn't necessarily, when it's used in the Bible, doesn't necessarily mean the idea of profanity that we may think of today. It may not necessarily mean, well, it means unholy in the sense that it's unauthorized, in the sense that it's common. If God says to do something a certain way, anything other than that would be profane, in essence. Okay, so God had established a particular way to do the fire. And here, these two priests had simply chosen their own way to do the fire. And according to this, they had not regarded the Lord as holy. And that's what we're seeing. Verse 3, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified. There we go. As a matter of fact, let's go back and let's look at where this was put into place. Okay? And then we can comment on some of these together. Turn with me, if you will, to Exodus chapter 30.
Hey, Kevin,
yes.
What does it mean when Aaron held his peace?
Well, my impression would be if your two sons had just been killed by fire from the Lord, you would be very... earlier they had just been awestruck, right, in one way, and now they're awestruck in the sense of, well, if I do one little thing wrong, am I going to be struck dead? Maybe something of that nature. I mean, I don't know exactly, but I think it was probably the idea of any parent.
But Moses kind of calmed him down.
Right.
Aaron might not have known that they offered profane fire. We don't really know.
Right. Right.
There's a lot that happened we don't know about.
Exactly. And that's also why, in a sense, I want to go ahead and go to Exodus 30 to bring that into the picture as well. And then we can comment on this in its entirety. I'm not moving away from this totally at all. But in Exodus chapter 30, the first 10 verses establish what's going on here. We have the altar of incense. Now, the altar of incense is in the holy place. It's in the at the time it was still called the tabernacle. It was established in the tabernacle right before the veil, right before the most holy place, right before where God met with the people. So the altar of incense was within a few feet physically of where God's dwelling place was in the temple. Do you think God wanted to establish that as a holy place? Do you think God wanted to make sure it was handled in a holy way? And so we see how it was established here in Exodus chapter 30. I'll read the first three verses and move it around for some others as well. You shall make an altar to burn incense on. You shall make it of acacia wood. Okay, right now I'm not that worried about verses 2 and 3 and 4 or 5. But here is where I want to pick back up, verse 6. First, I've simply established that it was an altar to burn incense on. I'll read verse 6. You shall put it before the veil, that is before the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat, that is over the testimony where I meet with you. Someone would someone pick up with 7 through 10?
Aaron shall burn on it sweet incense every morning. When he tends the lamp, he shall burn incense on it. And when Aaron lights the lamp at twilight, he shall burn incense on it. A perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer strange incense on it, or a burnt offering, or a grain offering, nor shall you pour a drink offering. And Aaron shall make atonement upon its horns once a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonement. Once a year he shall make atonement upon it throughout your generation. It is most holy to the Lord.
Okay. So these were the things that were established with it. And I believe this is what we're talking about. Back here in in Leviticus chapter 10, as it told about Nadab and Abihu, it is speaking about incense. They put incense on it. So I think that's why I'm coming here to the altar of incense. And you'll notice in verse 6 where it kind of established where it was. And so you remember how the temple was set up and the tabernacle, right? There was the outer court, there was the holy place, and there was the most holy place. Again, there was a veil that separated them. And as I said a moment ago, the altar of incense was right before the veil. And within the most holy place was also then the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant had the mercy seat on it, and above the mercy seat was where the Lord dwelt. Of course, in the Ark of the Covenant the Ten Commandments. Scripture or what. But verse 6. So you shall put it before the veil, that is before the Ark of the Testimony, before the mercy seat, that is over the testimony, over the commandments that were given, where I will meet with you. So again, to me, verse 6 really establishes the kind of the place, how things were set up, and how close things were. Again, verse 10, at the end of verse 10, it speaks about how holy this is. It is most holy to the Lord. Verse 7, in its holiness, Aaron shall burn sweet incense every morning when he tends the lamp. he shall burn incense on it. When he lights, he shall burn incense on it, a perpetual incense. Now, perpetual implies the idea that it will never go out. And I don't know where I read something yesterday speaking about the idea that there needed to be a fire there always, incense always. And I think it was more than just this. So this was always something that was lit, but yet it also needed to be, do I want to say relit? I mean, when Aaron lights the lamps, this may be another part of it as he's lighting the lamps. But anyway, you shall not offer strange incense on it or a burnt offering. Okay, so he specifically says here in verse 9, you shall not offer strange incense. That's how I believe we've got the connection back also in Leviticus chapter 10 from the strange fire that was offered by Nadab and Abihu. They neglected the idea of the holiness of God. Thoughts, questions, comments on either of these passages?
Do you think the other Levites, the tribe of Levi that weren't priests, do you think that they were the woodcutters and the people that gathered all the supplies and wonder what was the incense? Where did that come from? Cut firewood, that's a big deal.
The Levites?
A whole cow. Just think of the stack of firewood they had to take.
They were taking care of the needs of the tabernacle.
The priests that actually offered the sacrifices, they wouldn't have time to do that.
Right. So, yes, I would think that would be one of the roles, among other things, too. Yes?
The one thing that we need to notice is that this incense was a special mixture that God told them how to make. He says, you don't use this incense for anything else. You don't use it for yourself. This is in that same chapter, verse 34 through 38. It's a special mixture of stuff. And verse 37, but as for the incense which you shall make, you shall not make any for yourselves. According to its composition, it shall be to you holy for the Lord. So my question I wanted to ask is, when you talk about a profane fire, in my mind, I used to think that it was some kind of fire that God gave them. But now that we've talked about this, I think the profane fire has to do with the ingredients that make up the fuel of the fire. You think that's what it is?
Well, that could be.
Ingredients that fuels the fire, or is it an actual perpetual fire that God gave them and said, keep it going by keeping this incense on?
I mean, initially, as you were talking, in my own mind, I was making a distinction between the fire itself and the incense.
Okay.
And so that was kind of how I was going to respond. But at the same time, it is a perpetual fire. The word used is fire rather than incense, although the word incense was used there too, wasn't it?
If you go back to Leviticus 10:1, though,
right,
they took their censer, okay, then they put fire in it, then they put incense on it. So it could be two or three different times, really.
Right. It could be.
Did the fire come from the wrong place? Was it the wrong incense?
I still want to make a comment or two, but I am going to ring the bell because it is 10:10. Here is the thing that I want to make sure that we leave here with as well, and that is the idea that was mentioned, how holy this is. Okay? And of course, the connection we can make with us today. Yes, as priests, we need to be holy as well. 1 Peter chapter 1, I've mentioned it here, verses 15 and 16. But as he who has called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because that is, as it is written, be holy, for I am holy. God wanted the priests of his time to regard him as holy. Remember, that seemed to be the wording, at least from the New King James. So regarding the Lord as holy means that we will treat everything that we do for him as holy, and that we will do the best that we can to remain holy ourselves. Any last comment or thought?
Notice the frustration that Christ had then with them when they didn't follow what he asked them to do. Notice the frustration he had with Adam and Eve when they didn't follow his instruction, very simple instruction. what do you think his frustration is with us today when we don't follow his instructions? So the lesson for us today is that whatever he prescribes, we have to follow. And that's the real lesson here. The detail of what they got wrong or whatever, you know, that's probably neither here nor there. But he had very specific details that they were following and they didn't do it. And it proves the point that when we go against him, we frustrate him, we go against his love for us, the same thing that happened to him will happen to us.
Thanks. We'll go ahead and be dismissed for a few minutes.